Don't adjust that station. You have the correct station. That's correct. You got 98.7 KISS FM, and you got the number one talk show Sunday mornings in the tri-state area. That is correct. Open line. To join us in discussion, please give us a call at 1-800-288-KISS. You can also email us at openline@987kissfm.com, or you can fax us at 212-242-0706.
I want to welcome all of you back to this edition of Open Line, Sunday, May 21st, 2006. I'm Bob Pickett, along with the one and only third answer.
Brother M2May.
Yes, indeed. And the navigator, Mr. Bob Slade, is out recuperating and getting well, and we wish him well. Hey, Tooms, you know, we're going to talk about a very important subject that we rarely have a conversation about among ourselves. Mm-hmm. And again, as we emphasized in the last segment, if you got a father, you got a brother, you got a cousin, African-American male, tell them to listen to Open Line, because we're going to give them some information about prostate cancer that may make the difference between their life and their death. Tooms, all yours.
Okay. Like I said, we mentioned this particular program. We want to have this way back, I think, in December. Well, now it's here. And once I, like I said, I made my announcement, and I thought it was important to make that announcement, because a lot of times brothers need to hear other brothers, just like for women, when they hear about breast cancer, it almost humanizes it a little easier because of the fear of it. And the gentleman I'm about to bring on was the doctor who I was very fortunate to have. And the reason why I say very fortunate, we know the rise of prostate cancer in particular among African-American men. But this doctor practices a protocol that at the time I had my surgery was relatively new, and you know, he's very shy, you know, so I will say he's one of the finest doctors in this area, and you know, we can give a whole list of his credentials, but I want to get right to it. He'll mention some of it as we go along, but I want to get to it so we can begin to talk about this subject. And please feel free to call. I'd like to, without further ado, to introduce to the audience Mr. Dominic Savata, Dr. Dominic Savata.
Yeah, no doubt.
How you doing,
it.
Man? Well, welcome, finally.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate it. There's a few things that I really hope people take home after listening to us. You know, the first thing is, you know, prostate cancer was almost a dirty word, and it really doesn't need to be. You know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, breast cancer was the same way, and now I think women understand something that it may happen to women, and it's okay, and, you know, get early treatment, and you should have a good success rate. You know, prostate cancer is almost the same thing. A lot of gentlemen, they're nervous about going to the doctor. They're a little bit embarrassed about going to the doctor. They've heard stories about treatment for prostate cancer, and they don't want to have that happen to them. And, you know, in some regards, even the treatments and some of the side effects of the therapies sometimes are, you know, equally bad as the cancer. So hopefully we can have a little discussion about prostate cancer, a little bit about what we do over at Beth Israel, and everybody will have a much better understanding of prostate cancer.
So what I wanted to get to, the most fascinating aspect that I was exposed to when you and I hooked up was the use of the robot, Brother Pickett. I had never...
But before we get to the use of the robot, Tooms, and I think that's important, let's talk a little bit, Doctor, about prostate cancer and what are the signs and why it's important for people to get screened, and then we'll get to the robot.
Well, that's actually a very important point, and I'm glad you brought it up. You know, the main thing about prostate cancer is it grows very slowly. So when you first get it, really the symptom is nothing. Once you get symptoms, some of the things that can happen, if it's really far out there, is you get pain in the bones, if it gone to the bones. You can get trouble urinating if it's very extensive. And at that point, usually it's hard to treat. So what's been nice about therapy now, as opposed to, say, let's say, 15 years ago, if you get early screening with blood work, just a simple blood test once a year that looks for something called PSA, and you get a rectal exam, which is just a finger in the rectum once a year. And if there's any abnormalities there, with one of those two things, you can really pick it up way before you have any problems.
So it's important, and again, we want to emphasize this, it's important that that if you have a history, if there's a history, a family history of prostate cancer, that you get screened early. What's the optimum time point that a person should start getting screened?
Mm-hmm. With screening in general, we say 50 years old. If you're African-American, though, we know you're going to get it much younger and you're going to get it more aggressively, so we say at least 45 or 40. If you have any family history at all where your dad has it, or a brother or an uncle, you should go for age 40. Also, if you're in a urologist's office for any reason, let's say in your 30s or upper 30s, and you've had it pass the stone, or you had some blood in your urine, that would be another good reason just to have the urologist do the exam and possibly the blood work if there's anything at all related to the urinary tract.
Okay. And we also know, and for those of that are also listening, you know, you don't have to get the signs necessarily.
Right.
You know, I didn't have the signs. I knew I had the history. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it may, so the screening, I'm glad you brought that up, Brother Pickett, is absolutely essential, because you may be walking around with it, but if you're depending just on the signs, you may not get it the same way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So doctor, once a person comes in for a screening and his PSA level is up significantly,
Well, first of all, let's determine what's up.
Yeah,
what's a number where a person should be concerned?
That's another thing that's a little bit misunderstood, even among regular internal medicine doctors. Usually we say if you have a PSA of 4, it's okay. But we also know that if you're younger, your PSA shouldn't be that high. So really, even a PSA of 2.5 in a younger guy concerns me. There's other newer things now that even if your PSA was, let's say, maybe 1 last year, and now it's 2, that jump, you know, is a sign. And the whole idea now is if we treat the prostate cancer very early, at the very initial stages, not only are we going to get a good cure, which is very important, but then all the side effects of the surgeries or the radiation, when you have more advanced cancer, really are much more diminished, because you can do a much nicer job of just treating the prostate without worrying about treating that tissue outside the prostate.
You know, I just want to remind the listeners that if you want to join in this discussion over the next hour, you can reach us at 1-800-288-KISS. That's 1-800-288-KISS. Now, let's move on to what, now we've gone past the screening, which was a very important point. I'm glad Brother Pickett brought that up again. This new protocol, the robot.
Once you find that someone's...
we're already there.
Elevated it. And a biopsy comes back positive.
As far as the biopsy itself, again, not a scary thing. And a lot of times we do biopsies and guys don't have cancer. And really, it's about a 15-20 minute visit to the doctor. We put some numbing medicine in. It doesn't hurt very much. It can cause some blood in the urine and stuff. But it's not, again, not a big test. So don't be concerned really about, you know, getting screened, getting diagnosed. And really, you know, if you're going to get diagnosed, the earlier you get it diagnosed, the better we can treat it. Once you get diagnosed with prostate cancer, then it's about a good hour and a half discussion with myself. And usually I like to have the patient there and any family members, especially the wife, because it's scary for the family as much so as the man. And we go over the all the therapies. And the main ones, really, you should have the doctor should tell you about the surgery as well as the robotics. And then there's different forms of radiation you can have. And really, it's a long discussion about all the different forms of therapy. The one thing about surgery, and that's the main thing that I do, and for a younger guy, it's a much better cure rate over the long term. So if you're going to live 20 years, you know, it really is a better cure rate than any of the other radiations. And one of the problems with the surgeries in the past has been that it's a pretty long recovery. There's usually a lot of blood loss. The newest technique that we have for doing the surgery is with the robotic system. And let me tell you a little about that, because it's scary. You know, so, well, why? You know, I don't want a robot touching me. I'm scared of the robot. And it's the beginning. We had a lot of that. So we call it robotic surgery, but truly it's not really robotic surgery yet. If we say robotics, it means the robot really does the surgery, and it doesn't. What the robot really does, it allows us to see things better, because it has that. We put a camera inside the belly, and we can see the anatomy very magnified, 10 times magnified at a very close range. So you can see things a lot nicer.
And it's also in 3D, is it not?
Exactly. And the nice thing about doing, let's say, the robotic versus regular laparoscopy or the gallbladder surgery, the camera magnifies it in 3D. So when you look in there, you get all your depth perception back. So when you're trying to save nerves and other structures next to near the prostate, it really makes you do it more accurately. And then the other really nice thing about the software is when you control these controls that are like joysticks, it's kind of like a high-tech Nintendo, where you move the joysticks and your hands are the little instruments on the inside. So it takes your big hands, then it really minimizes the hands down to a little 1-inch thing on the inside of the body that can really get into a tight place. It can do a more accurate dissection, and then the software takes your hand motions and it'll just take away any tremor. It'll scale it down to the appropriate size that you want it to, and it'll do this. You know, it'll take your hand motion and mimic it on the inside.
So it's much more accurate than the human being actually doing the
exactly
surgery.
It's more accurate. It's hard to learn, though, because the problem is we're used to surgeons doing open surgery and even the camera surgery, but this thing magnifies it more and it lets you see anatomy that you really didn't see before. And if you have any bleeding, you know, if you have any bleeding at all, 10 times magnified, it seems like a lot of bleeding. So, you know, at the beginning, when you first learn,
and I want to offer something, Brother Pickett, in terms of my own experience. when the Dr. Savada and I discussed it. Once they went in, I had way more cancer than was even expected.
Didn't realize.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and of course, you know, being a nice guy, he waited till way after the operation to tell me this. But the fact of the matter is, if it were not for that protocol, then a surgeon wouldn't even have gone any further.
Well, there's, you know, hopefully most guys will get them before we got to you, because we can do a nicer operation and really not worry as much. But when you have more advanced cancer, the same thing we could do with our hands, we could do with the robot. We can kind of take a little bit of extra tissue around the prostate, do a better cancer operation. You know, I think that the robot lets you do the same thing for the, you know, the average kind of cancer with the more advanced cancer, if you have the, you know, the skill to do that. It's a little bit more difficult, but
Now, doctor, there are different stages, right? Stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four.
Right.
Explain those different stages so the audience can understand it.
Good question. Stage one basically is more when you diagnose the cancer, and it's how you diagnose it. Usually, if it's no symptoms and no normal exam, in stage one, just with the PSA alone. Then stage two is when you do the therapy, and if it's only in the prostate, it's really...
It's confined to the prostate.
Exactly. Stage two is confined to the prostate, and that's really where you want to be. If it's confined to the prostate, then, you know, technically you can take out the whole prostate, leave behind everything else, and get a good cure without really minimal side effects long term. Stage three is when you have cancer outside the prostate, and there's two issues with that. One, trying to get everything out at the side of the prostate, it becomes more difficult because you have to take extra stuff out. Then you might not be able to save some of the structures you want for, let's say, for erections long term. You can't save those as well. And then you have to worry more that the cancer may come back somewhere else, even if everything is out of the prostate area.
Mm.
So T4, then it's just kind of more advanced cancer. That's what we used to see a lot of, and fortunately we're not seeing that much of that anymore.
And African American males, where were you, Toombs? Which stage were you?
Man, I was nine. You're laughing, but not joking. No, it had made it an incredible leap. That's why once they went in, it was like, whoa. You know, my prostate, I think, was about 90% cancerous. But here's another point I want to make. Those who are listening to us, see, a lot of times, especially African-American men, you know, we got problems with the finger. You know, we talk real here, okay? But also, there's a concern. Now, they're listening to someone like you, and we're talking about this advanced technology. But we got also problems with insurance. How say I'm an average person out there listening. I don't have insurance, which most Americans don't. Mm-hmm. But in particular, our community, blacks and Latinos, how do they approach this? Can they go to a hospital? Because everybody doesn't have that advantage. Mm-hmm. What's the best information suggestion you can give to those who don't have insurance?
How did I get to a Dominic Savada? How did I get?
But we ain't gonna go that far. Listen,
No.
Let him answer that.
No, how did they get to that kind of expertise?
Well, there's two issues. As far as the robotics, there's a lot of guys doing it now. Fortunately, not everybody, but a fair amount.
You're being modest, but go ahead.
A few of us. If you have any insurance at all, well, the good thing is, they do cover it the same way as anything else. So although it's more advanced and it might be more expensive for the hospital, it gets covered the same way. Now, if you have no insurance at all, then it's a matter of going to certain hospitals that will do charity care. Most hospitals will. Okay. And I've done surgery on a couple of patients that had no insurance.
Right.
And as far as the hospital level, which is a big cost, they usually go through the government and they can get something called charity care, where if you meet certain requirements, they can take care of the mm-hmm. cost or the charity care. As far as doctors, they don't get anything out of that, but usually you talk to the mm-hmm. patient.
So it's very difficult.
It's very difficult.
We're going to be straight here, because that is a major problem. And Pickett has insurance, I have it, other people listening. But the bottom line is they still have to have it done. Are there hospitals that will just do, as we talked earlier, the screening?
Screenings are available almost anywhere, and a lot of times there's free clinics that mm-hmm. do free exams with the finger and also a blood work, stuff like that, so at least you get diagnosed. Because the problem is, if you have the cancer, you need to know, and financially it's a very important point, but you need to know if you have cancer. And either way, if you have cancer, you're gonna have to go with one of the therapies, and they all cost something.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's an important issue, and I wish I had a better answer.
Let me ask you this question, because and we need to hit this directly. Unfortunately, this kind of cancer, this particular kind of cancer, and I think maybe colon cancer as well, it's probably in the same category, impacts on African-American males more often than they do the general male population. Why is that?
Well, a lot of the reason why people get prostate cancer is genetics, and African-American, just in their genes, they're more likely to get it. Also, they're more likely to get it at a younger age. So if prostate cancer, let's say you can live 10 years with prostate cancer without knowing about it, if you're going to get it when you're 80, it doesn't matter so much. If you're going to get it when you're 40, 50, or 60, it matters a lot more. Mm-hmm. Also, we don't know exactly what causes it as far as the diet and stuff, but there's dietary factors. And like in Japan, the Japanese people don't get a lot of prostate cancer, but when they come over here after a couple of generations, they get it the same way as the regular person that lives over here. So we think high-fat diet leads to prostate cancer, probably a more aggressive form. If you're obese, probably also the same thing. So the main thing is some things you can't help being in the genes, some things with the way we eat and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, ethnicities do have a certain diseases that they're predisposed of or disposed to. Mm-hmm. We're going to finish this segment out with a little more conversation, and then we're going to take a break and come back and mm-hmm. open it to the callers. But
let me just finish this,
brother. I know you're anxious too, brother. Okay. But let me get a couple points in here. In terms of when we do come back, I do want to explore a little more in terms of the need for more study, which is one of the things that when you and I first talked, that you've been doing an extra amount of work in terms of how this affects African American men, and that there's a lot of more specificity in terms of study that needs to be done on why. I mean, the question was asked, why are we predisposed? Well, on one hand, yes, it's genetics. We know that, but it's diet. But the actual studies haven't been done to the level that they should be.
Well, there's a lot of data on prostate cancer. It's so common, and we know who gets them exactly. What part of the, let's say, diet or supplements and stuff. That part is currently being done, and hopefully we'll have an answer in 5 or 10 years. The other thing that just came out recently too. Looking at African Americans and Caucasians and who dies of prostate cancer, we always know that African Americans die more of prostate cancer. Studies came out recently.
And what's the difference? Like, give me a percentage of how many more.
Probably for let's say the white person, you have almost a 3% chance of dying of prostate cancer, and an African American, you're almost near 5%.
It's almost twice.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, and I can't comment a lot on this because it's new, and I have to read the actual study, but I read the summary. It said a lot of that is more socioeconomic, the death rate, not just. Not just simply more aggressive. So you do mm-hmm. get it more aggressive, but you fix that by screening early, which we do. But why is it you're dying still more of it? And a lot of it's like you said, you don't go to the doctor because insurance reasons, and you guys are getting undertreated. And that's certainly, at least it's good to, before you solve a problem, you have to recognize the problem and then attack the problem by saying this is the reason why it's like that and what can we do about it. Some things you can't do anything about with the genes, but the other stuff you can. Mm-hmm. It's important to look at everything and figure that out.
Well, what we're going to do is take a break here. And we're going to come right back. So all you brothers out there with questions, again, we're going to give the number out again if you want to participate in this conversation. It's 1-800-288-KISS, 1-800-288-KISS. You're listening to Open Line. We'll be right back with Dr. Savada.